golfj.com.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Golf J podcast on golfj.com. I'm Jim Sinacropi alongside Rhett Ticone here inside the Finger Lakes 1.TV studios in Seneca Falls, New York. On Monday, April 18th, 2016, where tonight we'll be talking about all the action in Hilton Head, where Brandon Grace won his first PGA Tour event, and good old Bryson DeChambeau had a very impressive professional debut.
That name, man. He's got the winner's name.
Bryson DeChambeau.
He's going to be a force.
Also, we'll take a look at First Tee pre-round nutrition bars and talk about Rhett's game golf package that arrived earlier in the week.
Absolutely. Looking forward to using that.
And after our interview with, and then we're going to actually have a part of our interview with CEO John McGuire of Game Golf that we recorded earlier this week. All that and more, including a chance to win a Golf J hat by answering this week's trivia question. So welcome back up in studio tonight, Rhett.
Hey, thanks, Jim.
It's got good to be back. Game Golf package. That's the shot tracking system. Absolutely. Where you tap the belt and you get all the stats the pros get.
Yep.
And haven't had a chance to get it on the course yet, so we'll talk about that a little later, but we're going to do a full review probably about a month. You know, we got to get some data in there, and I got to get mine in the mail, too.
Yeah, so. Got to get a few rounds in before we go and put it out there, but it is, seems like a pretty pretty nice way to track your rounds and track, you know, not only your rounds, but just how you're hitting the ball, what percentages of, you know, making fairways and, you know, hitting greens and regulation, things like that it tracks. So it'll be pretty cool to see.
So Brandon Grace wins the Heritage and at Harbortown Golf Links, Hilton Head, South Carolina.
Great place.
His first PGA Tour victory, which is hard to believe because he's a, you know, a top player in the world, but he's won you know, worldwide multiple times. But his first PGA Tour title, he fired a final round 66 at Harbortown to post a 9 under 275, two strokes better than poor old Luke Donald. He's encouraged. Yeah. You know, he was kind of fell off the face of the earth, and he just finished second, you know, in a tour event.
And that's what, his first top 10 or top 25 in this season, right?
Yeah, and good old Russell Knox.
Russell Knox is a good player.
You know, also. So, you know, Grace shook off a second round 74 with weekend rounds of 69-66, overcame the 54-hole leader Luke Donald and captured the RBC Heritage title. Now he moves to 19th in the FedEx Cup standings and further cements his reputation as one of the top players in the world. Adding a tour title to his 7 European Tour victories, he moved from 90 to 19th in the FedEx Cup standings. After the win, he also rose 3 spots in the official world golf rankings to number 11. And, you know, it's just amazing the way things are going right now on the PGA Tour. He's another contender for, you know, every major. And you wonder, again, on the show we talked about, we try to figure out who the big 3 is or who the big 4 is, but
I don't think there is one.
It's going to be a big 10, and that's going to make things harder on Spieth and Jason Day, the guys that look like they were going to establish themselves. I don't think anybody's going to be established number one for a long period of time, and it could be a guy like Brandon Grace.
It's almost like, you know, before, way back, the guys would dominate number one, had it for a long time. Before Tiger, it was Greg Norman. Greg Norman held the world number one for, 3 years in a row?
Mm-hmm.
And between him and Faldo, it was only a couple of those guys. And then you move into the Tiger era, and he holds it for, you know, aside from a few weeks here and there with Vijay Singh, he holds it for basically a good part of 6-7 years. But now it's like every other week somebody's jumping in there, and it's in, you know, a guy's jumping in, he's jumping out, he's back in, he's back out. But again, it's not even a top 3 or a big 3 that these guys want to market and talk about. It's, there's so many good golfers out there right now. And in every tournament, you know, fantasy picks, we hit and miss. We do pretty good job of, you know, knowing who's going to be up there. But to predict a winner every week is almost impossible the way all these guys are playing golf. And a lot of European guys are playing over on the PGA Tour now, too.
I think that's a big difference. You know, I really think that's one of the big differences is the purses on the PGA Tour are so much bigger.
Right.
That all the great international players are now playing on the PGA Tour, which is bad for the European Tour, but I think it's kind of good for the game to have a unified tour.
Right.
And I think, you know, one of the things that could suffer would be the Ryder Cup competition, but maybe they change the rules where...
Yeah, I think they got to lighten those rules a little
bit. It's just where you were born.
Right. because Paul Casey not being on the Ryder Cup team, and he's playing pretty good, and that would be, you know, it's going to be a shame that he's not on the team, and it would be helpful to them to have him on the team.
Well, guys like Danny Willett and Rory McIlroy want to play the PGA Tour almost full time, but they have to play the minimum European Tour events, and again, I would rather see the PGA Tour maybe expand to Europe.
I was going to say, when does it become a world tour like they talked about years ago, and Greg Norman first wanted to, you know, take and they threw it out, and then they brought it back as the WGCs, but a true world tour where it's just the season never ends, and you're, you know, in Florida 1 week, you're in Dubai the next, you're in Asia, then you're back in California. You know, it's just all over the country and all over the world.
Yeah, and I think you could even also make it, let's say you did a 12-month schedule worldwide, and we're getting kind of off topic here, but let's say you do something like that, but then let's say that every player has a max amount of tournaments they can play in to make it fair, so you can feel comfortable about not playing every single tournament and not falling behind the pack, especially if you're one of those borderline you know, tour card players. And then maybe you expand it from the top 125 to the top 175 or whatever
it is. The FedEx Cup goes worldwide too, and two of the tournaments are in U.S. and two of the tournaments are worldwide or something along those lines. That'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
1 year the finals in Europe, 1 year it's in America. Have it rotate.
I think we're onto something. Maybe we should put our heads together and come up with a whole show about that. You could talk about it for a long time.
Yeah, we could come up with a lot of scenarios, but you know, I think maybe one of the big losers in that situation might be some established PGA Tour events in America, because they would probably have to cut back a few of the domestic tournaments to fill out some of the European dates.
Not all of them could be alternate field events, but yeah, you would see a little bit of a hit to those. But it, you know, getting back to what we were saying, it's just so many good players out there. There's so many options for them, and you know, the top guys are not necessarily going to be the top guys in 2 months, you know. If they're not playing well, somebody's going to take their spot. And it's a dog-eat-dog world, and those guys are going to get after each other. But it's going to be great for the game of golf. And watching week-to-week tournaments will always mean something.
Yeah. Luke Donald's first top 25 of the season in 10 starts, and he shot four rounds of par or better for the first time in 2016. Yeah. So here's a guy, former number one, who fell way down into the 150s, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was, what, 2 years ago, he was number one for a short period of time.
And it was, he fell right off the
right
map.
Right off the map.
I mean, he was terrible.
He was a little injured, wasn't he, though? Didn't he have an injury?
Well, I think that maybe he might have had a little injury, but I think it was his ego that was hurting the most. He struggled putting.
He certainly hasn't been back to the form he was a few years back, but this is a good finish for him.
So he makes his way back, and usually when a guy falls off the map like that, a top player, whether it be like Ian Baker Finch did it.
Yeah. He fell way off the map.
But when they come back like Donald has to come in second in a tour event, that usually kind of indicates that he's going to be back. And can you imagine if he tries to stake a claim back and, you know, is the world number one?
It's just add another one to the list.
So, and also good to see Ernie Els
recovery mode.
Yeah, 5 under par, 66 on Sunday, tied for 14th. He's 46 years old, and you know, he's just as competitive as ever if he can cure those yips.
Well, they were saying too that you know, he's still one of the hardest working guys on tour. They were saying on Saturday he was done fairly early, but that he was still on the range. You know, he was the last one to leave the range at about 7:30, 8 o'clock on Saturday night, working on his game. So he's a grinder. He's not going to let the issues with the putter get at him. He's too good to stay down, and you know, he's just been so consistent over the years. It's good to see him come back with a good one. He's got to give him a half an assist too on the win, because Brandon Grace had said that he got he had coffee with Ernie. There, you know, he had coffee with Ernie Els the other day at his house in Hilton Head, and kind of got some advice from Ernie, and it really helped him.
Well, Ernie also convinced him to play in this particular tournament. He thought it suited his game.
Right, exactly.
The small greens, shot makers golf course. So, glad he took his advice for sure.
T14 with the assist.
Russell Knox is the guy who kind of nobody's talking about this weekend. DeChambeau, we haven't talked about yet. We're going to spend some time with him. But Russell Knox, a Scot, finished tied for second with Luke Donald and moved up to third in the FedEx Cup standings. He had a runner-up finish this week at the Heritage, his second of the season. He won the World Golf Championship HSBC Champions back in November, if you remember that one.
Seems like a long time ago.
And he following week finished runner-up in the OHL Classic at Mayakoba. Yeah, that was prior to Christmas.
Right.
The only players he trails in the FedEx Cup, two Australians, Adam Scott and Jason Day. So. Yeah.
He's making his move up the charts, and you know, with the way he's been playing, he has a win and a runner up, and then another runner up. I mean, you gotta like him when it comes to major season as well.
And then you got a guy who I just am kind of enamored with, Bryson DeChambeau. He in his pro debut, DeChambeau made a routine par on the 72nd hole and shot 3 under par 68. Difficult conditions. And he moved into a tie for fourth at 5 under par, and that follows up his tee for 21st at last week's Masters, where he was really in contention and won low amateur. Since he finished in the top 10, his appearance in this week's Valero Texas Open won't count towards his 7 sponsor exemptions allowed this season as a non-tour member, although it will count as one of 12 total tour events he's allowed. So, you know, some special circumstances right. for this guy when he declared, you know, he wanted to go pro. It will go a long way, though, in his quest to earn special temporary member status on tour. DeChambeau would have earned 122.5 FedEx points for his fourth place finish. And if he can reach 361, which is the number of last season's number 150th player, he will be eligible to receive unlimited sponsor invites for the regular season. And what sponsor is not going to invite this guy? He's an enigma. He plays the game totally different than everybody else, and people throw that down. He plays it different. He literally plays it different. Sure. His equipment's different.
He custom makes a lot of his sticks. He has the upright swing. So he's different there, you know. Like you said, with his clubs are all the same length, 6-iron length. So that's different. He's like the mad scientist of golf. But to go along with all the stuff that he does, he has a lot of game too. So this isn't a fly by night guy. I mean, he won the U.S. Amateur. That's no easy thing to do. He won the NCAA championship
in the same year, and then in the same calendar year,
yeah.
Made the cut at the Masters.
Right.
And finished fourth in his first PGA Tour event. Jordan Spieth missed the cut in his first PGA Tour event,
right?
Which I think was the Farmers.
And
then he went. So DeChambeau seems to be ahead of the curve of all these young guys. And how long will it be at this pace before he wins? And how long will it be before he wins a major championship?
Yeah, I don't.
Could it be this summer?
It might be, yeah, but I don't think it's gonna be long before he wins.
It's hard to win on the tour.
And well, Harbortown is way different course than Augusta.
Right.
I mean, it's
especially
tight.
The way it played this week.
It's very tight. There's not a lot of room for error. The trees are right up against the edge of the fairways.
Yep.
And it's target golf as opposed to Augusta, where you got the big wide open fairways, and if you're driving in the fairways, you're in pretty good shape. So to go and to totally adjust his game 1 week after a big tournament like that, his first week as a pro, all that goes with it, signing with Puma and Cobra and all of that, to do what he did is very impressive. And I don't think it's going to be long before he cracks into the win column, and then he has no issues with his tour status.
Yeah, really. It's just amazing to me that a kid can – you know, just play so well out of the gate in the Masters and
right.
at a PGA Tour event. Think of the players he beat this mm-hmm. week.
Yeah.
Jason Day.
Yeah.
You know, 100 and, you know, how many players were in the field? He came in fourth.
Yeah.
He beat all those guys, the established season tour pros.
Well, you think about last week, two drives on 18 on Friday really derailed him, so to speak. He didn't, he kind of collected himself, but he doesn't get that 8. You know, if he pars that hole, he's 4 shots better already. And just think of what he would have done or could have done over the weekend had he not, you know, really kind of messed up that last hole on Friday. So to think about where he could have been, he was 21st. He probably would have been top 10 at the Masters had he not had that bad hole, which is part of the game. But just saying, he's on his way up, man. He's got a lot of talent. He's got he's really into the game scientifically, which you know a lot of people are doing nowadays. So he's got all the things going for him that'll make a great tour pro and somebody that'll be fun to watch.
And if you still aren't convinced that this guy's a future top five player in the world, a major champion, multiple major champion, the Heritage was his eighth consecutive made cut as a pro. Eight straight cuts. How many guys on tour could say they made eight straight cuts?
Right.
He finished no worse than tied for 27th in three PGA Tour starts during that span. He was second at the Australian Masters. Second. That's a big tournament that attracts a lot of international play.
That's a big PGA Tour or European Tour tournament, yeah.
And he held the first round lead at the European Tour event in Abu Dhabi, the biggest one. You know, Jordan Spieth, right. Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy played in that. All the leader after 18 holes was Bryson DeChambeau.
Doesn't seem like he's scared of the stage or the bright lights, that's for sure.
Now, does Bryson DeChambeau spark a new following of people playing his style of golf? The all his irons are 6-iron length. Does King Cobra market?
Start marketing a set that's like that? I'm sure they will. I mean, they have to, right? They have to.
Yeah, if he's your guy, right?
You're really the one right now that would, not that they, anybody else couldn't, but you're the only one that would want to because of what he's doing. So they've got to come out with a set next year that's all 6-iron length, you would think. I don't know if that's something I would try, but you got to think that that's going to be something that's definitely going to happen soon.
You know, I think they go out and they do the demo days at all the different places and let people try it. And I think you'll get a few takers. You know, there's people with a certain mindset, I think, that will be similar to DeChambeau's that are really analytical.
Yeah.
And rationally, what he does makes sense.
No doubt.
If all your clubs are the same length, then you got one swing to master, one setup.
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty straightforward. I think you'll see next year in January at Orange County National on the range at the PGA show, you'll see Cobra's exhibit will probably have a set of full clubs with 6-iron length shafts in it.
You give it a shot.
I wouldn't doubt it. And he'll be standing right there demoing on for everybody. That'd be my guess.
Well, a product that you first became acquainted with when you were down at the PGA Tour merchandise show in Orlando, and they got everything down there. Clubs, shoes, balls, game golf. But they also have nutritional bars. And so we've had a while to give these things a shot, and we've eaten quite a few of them.
Love them.
Their first tee / 10th tee, I suppose.
Yes.
Nutritional bars. And I have one right here, and they come in all different shapes and sizes and flavors. This one in my left hand here is a oatmeal raisin, which was my favorite.
Like that
I actually had a tough time saving this one for the show to do the review. And then this particular flavor I have here is chocolate peanut, but they do have a wide variety of different flavors.
Yes.
And the idea being that you take a first tee bar off the first tee, and then when you make the turn, what do you got? You have one of the 10th tee bars. They're a little smaller.
Yeah, the 10th tee bar, it's a little smaller. It's more like a candy bar. But
to keep you going.
Yeah, to keep you going and get you through the last nine holes, you know. So the first tee bar is made of soy and oats and crispy rice, so it's almost like a Rice Krispie treat. If you get that chocolate peanut butter one or chocolate peanut one, it's like a Rice Krispie treat with chocolate on it.
So and peanuts.
It's an awesome taste.
They all taste good. I like them all.
They do.
I really like them all. I have my favorites, but I like the taste of them all.
Right. And then the 10th tee one, you know, it looks and tastes like a candy bar, but it doesn't have as much fat in it, and it has twice as much protein as a normal candy bar or a lot of the energy bars that are out there. And, you know, it contains a green tea and ginseng extract that helps you sustain energy throughout the back nine on the course. And they're really good bars. They taste great. The texture of them is really good. You know, some of those energy bars you might have tried in the past are really chalky or just don't taste like you'd want a peanut butter to taste, or you know, whatever they say on the wrapper, they don't taste that way. Well, these things do. They're gluten-free, so there's no issues when anybody has gluten allergies. You can get them, as you said, in all different flavors. They also have trail mix packages too, but just a great energy bar that you can get at Get online at their website or at a lot of different golf courses around the country.
GolfEnergyBar.com.
Right, GolfEnergyBar.com. So
SCNS Sports Foods makes these things, and like you said, they're saying they're fueling your pre-round and late round of golf. And you know, the way I look at these things is, when you're on the golf course, you don't want to ever feel hungry. You know, you're out there trying to perform at a high level. You don't want to be hungry.
No.
But you also don't want to be, like, weighed down. So, you know, you don't want to show up to the course a half an hour after eating three Egg McMuffins, been known to do. Not three, but, you know, usually that's – a lot of times that's my pre-round meal.
Is your go-to?
Is an Egg McMuffin or a sausage McMuffin at McDonald's and an orange juice. And then maybe a donut or two.
Well, I think this is definitely a better option for you nutritiously, and the flavors are great. It'll keep you going through the entire round. Sometimes I'll eat more than one just because of the taste. They're that good. The first tea bar, I love it. I love it's like the Rice Krispie with the chocolate on it, and it's just they're good. They've hit a home run with these things. They know what they're doing, and they're golf specific.
Yeah, which is nice. I mean, let's face it, they're energy bar, a protein bar, a nutritional bar.
Right.
But just the fact that they've custom tailored them for your golf. Round of golf, first tee, 10th tee, is pretty neat. And there are some high end courses that will have these at the turn, the 10th tee bars at the turn, and the first tee bars in the pro shop.
Yeah, that's where I've I started when I was golfing out in California a few times, and then Arizona. A few of my trips, I tried these and loved them. And then, the second I saw that they were at the show, I went right over to them to give a talk to them about them and get more information about them. So they're catching on, too. You're going to see them a lot more courses all over the country real soon.
Yeah. And another nice thing about these is that 10 cents of the sale of each bar goes to the first tee, providing positive youth development through golf. So dime's not a lot, but they sell a lot of these bars, so it does add up. And so a couple of the bars even have that first tee logo to let you know. So,
and I think they run a special, too. If you're on their website, you buy a certain amount, you'll get a certain amount free of the trail mix bars.
Okay.
Yeah.
So GolfEnergyBar.com, and it's first tee, 10th tee, golf nutritional bars by SCNS Sports. So about that time of the show, for the Golf J Trivia Challenge, tweet your answer to @TheGolfJ. First person to do so will win a Golf J hat. So get the tweet. If you're watching us live, get the Twitter up and get ready if you know the answer. This week's question, who was the last amateur to win a PGA Tour event? We just talked about Bryson DeChambeau. He didn't win.
Nope.
And he won't win as an amateur because he's a pro now. But who was the last person to win a tour event as an amateur? We'll have the answer for you at the end of the show. So every week we give you golf tips, little tips. This isn't really an instructional podcast, but most people listening to it are golfers. And sometimes we pull them right out of some classic books. Sometimes something that we see during the round kind of sparks the idea for the tip. And Luke Donald, we talked about earlier in the show, finishing second, really have a nice resurgence. And one thing that he did leading into the round was he changed the putter. He basically moved the shaft to the center of the putter. He kept the putter head, moved the shaft. It was a subtle change, new shaft position on his Odyssey Works versus number 7H putter. So same putter head, changed the shaft position, and he was quoted saying, "I haven't changed my putter for a long time until the last couple of weeks." Donald said, "I've got the same head on my putter, but it's just a different shaft. It's a center shaft. I wanted a little bit different look." So, what's the tip? Especially for us amateurs who don't spend nearly as much time practicing as these guys, change it up. If you're not putting well, or you can't see the line, and you're having 4 or 5 3 putts, you try something totally different. You can make a small tweak or you can make a big change, but try something different. open up the stance, close the stance, put the ball back of the foot, front of the foot, try a different putter.
I'm going to go up a little more upright this year. I noticed I was a little too far bent over the ball last year, and I think I'm going to try. And
just... Michelle, it works for Michelle.
That was too far. I wasn't quite that far, but I think I'm going to stand up a little higher. I just felt like I can feel the line better and keep the pendulum a little more. Being a little more upright. So I've been trying that on the practice screen. We'll see if it translates out on the course. But
yeah, well,
right, though. Just tinker a little bit. You know?
Yeah, what do we got to lose, right?
Right,
so,
exactly.
And that sometimes can be all it takes. You know, again, if you're struggling putting and you just keep trying the same thing, you know, just change it.
Sometimes you can let it go too long and it's counterproductive for sure.
On the other hand, if you're a pretty good putter and you're just struggling a little bit, be careful not to stray too far away because you might want to find your way back to what you did when you were putting good. So this week's golf tip. So earlier in the week, Rhett, you and I sat up here in this same studio and we pulled in via Skype John McGuire of Game Golf.
Right.
And we talked with John for about 40 minutes. We'll play a few minutes of that interview coming up here, and you can watch the whole interview if you want at golfj.com or search it on YouTube. But
interesting story of his path to get to game golf, you know, being an engineer in Ireland and, you know, being somebody who was going along that career path and had a love for golf and just decided to move to the States and start up this company based on his software development background and his love of the game of golf.
Now, when people are watching the interview, it might help them if you kind of just show them the basics of a game golf here. Your package came in the mail this week, and so here are the components.
So you have the main sensor that you attach. It's real small. It's very inobtrusive. Put that right on your belt, okay? So that's what you...
Got a belt clip right on the back, right?
Yep, it does. It has a belt clip on the back. Just attach that to your belt. And then you put these tags. You see here the red tag. You put that right in the end of your club, and they're all marked pitching wedge, you know, driver, three wood, hybrid, all the way through through the sand wedge, and then they have a few special ones for lob wedge or if you have a gap wedge or things like that.
So then the purpose is
all your clubs are covered.
Fully track your
rounds. Fully track your shots on the range. You know, your putting, all of that.
I don't understand how you track the shots on the range, though. What do you mean?
Well, they shows you can just track your shots from the distances that they go.
Well, because you would have to walk up to where they went on the range.
You know, you're right.
I don't think that's going to work on the range. But show them, you know, you tap the bottom of that.
You just tap the bottom of this to that.
Before every shot.
It's Bluetooth technology, so you just bring it real close to there before every shot, and then you take your shot. And then once you move up to the next shot, the GPS calculates where you were, and then it goes, and then you tap it again for your next shot.
And then you go on the gamegolf.com website, and there you can visualize your whole round and track all your stats and really have everything from sand saves to scrambling, everything you see on tour.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, you can look at it as you go if your Bluetooth or smartphone is in your cart with you, if you want to look at stuff, or you can just do the whole round and then go back to it later and check out how you did.
So this isn't necessarily our review. We're going to use it. I got to get mine ordered and coming into, and we'll come back to you probably a couple months from now when we have some serious data, and we'll give it the full GolfJ.com review. But for now, I want you to have a listen to a great conversation we had over Skype with John McGuire of Game Golf. One product that really made me take notice when it was first announced, what, about maybe 2 years ago now, maybe not quite 2 years, was Game Golf. Because we talk a lot about technology in golf and how it applies to equipment, but really the analytical nature of being able to track your shots and then go back and look at them statistically from one round or a whole season, it's just really intriguing. And when you talk about game improvement, I think that the average golfer can probably make greater strides improving by analyzing the results of what they're doing on a golf course.
Right.
So
and on the range too.
Yeah, absolutely. So really interesting new product, and I see now that you have even more offerings with the smartphone app, starting at $99. So really exciting new product, John. And how did you get to where you are today? How did you get involved with Game Golf? And just give us a little background.
So, okay, so the brief background is, so I'm from Ireland, from Galway on the West Coast. I have two backgrounds. Engineering is one, and performance psychology is another. So I would have worked in the performance psychology side of things, from everything from a professional ballerinas flying over from the UK to Ireland to the weekend warrior golfers. And then my day job was a software engineer. So this is it's a coming together of two passions, both technology and performance. But one of the things I realized, you know, I had gone to the golf show for years, you know, looking at all the exhibits, the products. And one thing that I realized was a lot of the stuff that you see at that show is technology driven versus design driven. So I knew that if we really wanted to have a successful consumer product, we would need world-class design. So around 2011, I made the trek to San Francisco from Ireland to, you know, start raising the capital, but also to engage with one of the top designers in the world. His name is Yves Bernard. Mm-hmm. He's a Swedish designer behind, you know, most iconic consumer products out there. So we got one of the best designers in the world involved, and we started building the team, and roll on 2014. At the PGA show, we launched on the Wednesday morning. We opened the show with the CEO of the PGA of America, Pete Bevacqua. So the PGA are involved in this company. And, you know, we work very hard to help them with their mission, which is to grow the game and serve their members. We also had Mike McCarley from the president of the Golf Channel. They're actually involved in the company from a media perspective. It's not just improvement, there's media and social angles to what we're doing. And we had Graham McDowell, the U.S. Open champion, fellow Irishman, who's also involved in the company. So we launched the partnerships into the industry. We launched the product into the industry, and we had a very successful launch, very, very successful launch. And that product was called Game Golf Classic. And it was really a product, and it also was USGA and RNA approved, so the technology can be used in tournaments. In fact, Graham wore it in the practice round and maybe our three competition at the Masters. Jim is wearing it, so Jim Furyk is involved, and Lee Westwood is involved now, and now we've other tour players and both women and men involved from the different tours. So on the PGA Tour, you've got ShotLink, which is the shot tracking system that the professional golfers use, and now with Jason Day and Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler and these guys coming to the fore, a kind of younger batch of golfers, they're all into stats. They use stats in their practices. And they use stats to help understand what they're doing while they're golfing, sure. You know, to bring awareness to their game. Otherwise, you know, it's all subjective. It's what you kind of think. And we know from our data, which we have a lot of data right now, we really understand what's happening with golfers out there. You know, most golfers across the globe, because it's been used now in 124 countries worldwide, most golfers select the wrong club. They don't really know their distances. They think they know their distances, yeah. Yep. But they really don't. So that's kind of the background. That's kind of who's involved. So this has been used on tour by, you know, with that system called ShotLink. So we're ShotLink for amateur golfers, or at least that's how it has been described as an analogy. And we have some, you know, in our database, we have really, really good golfers using the system across 124 countries worldwide right now.
When you started this, you said Graham's a partner or involved with it. Did you really look at this more to go towards professional golfers, or did you have the soul in mind of going to the everyday golfer as the primary purpose for this?
Oh, most definitely the primary purpose was to go to the everyday golfer. But, like, I mean, we knew that, you know, if you look at a pyramid of influence in golf, the tour players, you know, there's a reason that TaylorMade and Callaway and Nike and everyone else is spending a lot of money with these guys, getting them to use their equipment. They're obviously huge influencers in this market. So, you know, I went after Graham. I didn't know Graham just because I'm from Ireland. It actually took me a year to get to him. And when he used the first product, which was this big black ugly box that really wasn't at all designed, he got it immediately. He got the potential of it around collecting data and bringing awareness to every other golfer that doesn't have ShotLink to be tracking their rounds or 300 volunteers going after you with high precision GPS and laser equipment. So
right.
Yeah, this is being used. We have a few tour players, but we have we have a lot of amateur golfers around the world using our technology, and there's different value propositions. So for the really, really, really good golfer that wants to dial in their game, we've got strokes gained analysis, you know, and that sort of MIT Professor Brody came up with that kind of system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we make that easy. We present the graphs and all that, but then in English, we tell you, you know what, if you start using your 6-iron from 150 yards from the rough, and if you start to dial that in, you'll reduce 2.3 strokes per round. So we actually feedback in English what you need to do. So we make sense of that type of a system. And then for like the mid-handicap golfers or the guys that are mid to really good, you know, it's all about improvement. It's all about your stats. It's all about benchmarking, seeing how others are doing in terms of handicaps that you want to get to.
Yeah, right.
And then for the higher handicap golfers, it's all about grip it and rip it, and it's all about competitions and social. So I can play a course here in San Francisco, and I can compete with my brother in Ireland or colleagues in Asia.
Right.
So we've two strands of development going on here. One is all about improvement, because, you know, that one guy in the four ball that's really good, the other guys are looking, what's the driver you just hit that ball with, right? So it has to be about improvement, but it has to be fun and it has to be social for it to be viral. And we're working on both aspects.
Yeah, and you mentioned Graham McDowell wearing it. It was pretty cool. I was able to go at gamegolf.com on your website and see his shot for shot at Augusta in the front nine. And while I was there, I loaded up our home course at Seneca Falls Country Club, and I saw a couple players who used your product on our course, and you could see their hole round overlaid on the, I assume it's a Google, you know, Earth satellite image of the course. And it was just amazing. And then so my mind starts working about, man, can you imagine how much fun this would be for me to use this, not only for one round, but for a whole season. And then, you know, get in that set. I've played golf for 30 years now, and it would be almost like an awakening or an epiphany to be able to see the stats of my game. Because other than maybe tracking putts per round and stuff like that, that's it. And I'm definitely using it this season. It's going to be great.
The nice thing, too, is, I mean, like you said, basically before all you could track was your putts. Maybe you could keep track of your greens and regulation, but you had to write all that stuff down, and you had to really, you know, do it as you were going instead of now just being able to play your game and look at it as you're going or look at it after the round without having to do any other work towards it.
So I think, you know, John, that definitely that having that amount of data available to the average golfer, whether they're a scratch handicap, a 10 handicap, or even a 20, you know, even a 25 handicapper could probably shave more strokes off their game if they had that data set to say, geez, you know, maybe I should put this one club in my bag and not pull it out and hit a 5-iron instead of this hybrid because it's killing me. Or maybe I should focus my attention on shots from 100 yards and in because I have such a low percentage of even hitting the green. So all this kind of data is there for you. And then you mentioned that's the improvement aspect, but the social aspect of it, too, is fantastic because you can share these rounds, you know, with your friends across the country or even, you know, what we play with a regular group of guys on Wednesday nights, and I kind of want to convince them all to buy it. And so if everybody used it, can you imagine how much fun it would be, you know, every Wednesday night when you got home to kind of check out everybody's round and then over the course of the year. So I just think, as I said off the top, with all the innovations in the game of golf, this is something truly unique, and you've kind of found a unique growth potential for this. Is there much competition you're facing? Because I've seen some other products out there, but none of them seem to be as refined and fully developed as Game Golf has become.
Yeah. Just back to the, you know, your buddies on the Wednesday evening. So we've got challenges that right now you've got companies like Bridgestone and Graham McDowell and the tour players, they issue challenges every few weeks, and we get like thousands of people participating in those challenges, seeing where they are in the leaderboard against tour players, are winning prizes. But we've also got live leaderboards coming. So you with your three buddies on a Wednesday evening, you'll be able to have a live leaderboard situation going on while you're golfing.
Oh, yeah, man, that's great.
The apps while you're playing. So there's a lot of good stuff in place, and there's a lot of fun stuff coming.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned three guys. We're talking 30 guys. Like on Wednesday night, we have an open kind of thing, and we get between 20 and 30 guys each week. And so when you say a live leaderboard for that, you know how amazing that could be?
Yeah, it's fun. We're testing it right now. It's nearly ready to be released. And it's just changes the game, actually, because it really is. It's really fun to know where you are in comparison to the other guys, mm-hmm. and then where you are in comparison to guys that are ahead of you in the field or behind you. So that just adds that social fun element to it, which can only be good for the game of golf, right? You know, it's leveraging technology to do something we're doing anyways, but to make it more interesting. And then the banter happens after your round, mm-hmm. where people are commenting and, you know, having a go at each other. And so it extends golf from just from the golf course as well, which is another advantage of this. But you asked then about competition. We launched this thing in 2014. We launched with those partners. We were the first to create the shot tracking category. There was nobody else doing this. And where you have success will bring competition. So yes, there is competition out there now. You are right. And of course, I'm going to be biased in that. It isn't as developed as what we're doing, because we're a good few years at this now. And having those partners, we're constantly ahead. We're constantly refreshing. We're constantly, you know, and having a large data set now of golfers around the world. One of the things we pride ourselves in this company is we're constantly taking in feedback. We allow customers to vote on what features they'd like to see next.
Yeah.
So I think if we continue to do that, I think we have a real opportunity for success in delivering a product that really, you know, really adds value to golfers and not just some nice to have. Because ultimately, that's what we've got to do here, and that's what we're trying to do every day, is how do we really, really add value in what we're developing? How do we keep it simple, and how do we use design so that the data is intuitive? Because most of the things in golf is just clunky, you know, the data is hard to understand. You need to be a mathematician in a lot of cases, whereas we really work hard in, you know, making sure that some of my friends or my family that, you know, maybe aren't as tech savvy, let's say my mother, for example. If my mother can understand this, anyone can understand it. Right. That's just because she's, you know, I mean, I'm talking here about, you know, it can't be just for the younger generation that are used to technology. It has to be simple that it can cross the chasm for all age golfer types.
Sure.
And that's really work hard at that.
Right. Hey, John, have you seen, you know, you had a pretty big presence at the PGA show this year. Have you seen a expanding interest from teachers and club pros as far as getting the product at their shops to one sell, obviously, but also to utilize on the range for instructors and then, you know, doing some of these social challenges through the clubs? You know, you could actually, if a club bought 8 or 10 of these and had challenges with the game golf product, have you seen any increase in that? How's that been received?
The product has been like, so we started with Game Golf Classic, which was our first generation product. That was 2014. In 2015, we launched free apps, so iOS and Android. And these are apps that you can download from the Play Store or from the iTunes Store. And it allows you to get going. You get the same functionality, but you manually tag every shot. But it allows you to see what the system is. It allows you to experience the data. And then eventually what we're finding is people then go and purchase a device. In November 9th of 2015, we launched our latest product, which is Game Golf Live. And that's the product that surfaces data to the watches or to the iOS and Android phones. Mm-hmm. And then it surfaces to the Apple Watch, to the Pebble watches, and to the Android Wear watches. So now you get your distances to the green. You get two things, really, right? You get your distances that you hit your clubs while you're playing, and you get the distance to your location. So now you have the complete solution. And I guess because we've added, you know, because we've been listening to our customers, which in a lot of cases are PGA professionals. Remember, the PGA of America is involved in this company, and they kind of put their hat on us,
right,
to work with them from a digital context in growing the game and working hard with their members to basically help their members be successful. So that's kind of a long-winded answer to yes, there's very strong adoption from PGA professionals, both on course and off course.
Right.
We were in a lot of locations.
A lot of
locations.
I could totally see an instructor, you know, having one of these and, you know, adding it to a feature for, you know, giving a lesson. You know, you can get a regular lesson, or, you know, for this, you can add the game golf feature, and I can give you a full rundown of all your stats if it was a teaching round or if it was just out on the range. I can totally see the connection there. It's a great product for that.
From a coaching perspective, it's an absolute no-brainer. I mean, so, you know, the good coaches, the really, really good coaches that use our system, what they'll do is they'll sit down with their students or with the guy on the range, or, you know, the first question they should ask, and the good ones really do ask this, is what's your goals? What do you actually want to achieve? Do you want to become a 15 handicap golfer? Do you want to become a 10 handicap golfer? You know, do you want to become scratch? So depending on what the goals are, then the, you know, it's one thing looking at their swing on a driving range, right? But the reality is that, and you guys know this, if you're, because you're golfers, there's a big difference hitting a bucket of balls and hitting one ball on the tee box of hole number one.
Sure.
Yep. So this system, you know, first step is what is it that the golfer wants to achieve? Second then is go play three rounds of golf and use the system, tag every shot. And then when you come back, I'm going to see exactly what you're doing. I'll see what your shot dispersion is off the tee box. I'll see when you're approaching the green, are you coming up short? I'll see what your club distances are. I'll know if there's a gap in your bag. So the coach can then really understand what's actually happening while this guy or girl is playing golf. And then you can use what we call benchmarks, where you can now set, you can go into the system on the web, you can select, I want to become a, let's say, I want to become a 10 handicap golfer. And then across a range of statistics, such as fairway accuracy, greens in regulation, number of putts, putts per hole, so maybe six or seven different kind of measurements in a very intuitive graph format, you can see, you can compare yourself to the golfer type that exists at the 15 or 10 or scratch golfer. So now you can see the areas that are weak, and the coach can now say to you, okay, your scrambling is really poor, you're not getting any greens in regulation, so here's the areas that...
So there you go. That was John McGuire. You can get the whole interview online at golfj.com. We talked to him for about 40 minutes. You'll probably listen to about 20 minutes there of the conversation. And, you know, he, first of all, I want to thank him for being so accommodating to us, spending that much time with us. And it was, it's just a really intriguing product that, you know, that you got there on your desk.
Absolutely.
So, GameGolf.com is a website, and we'll have our full review after we've run it through its paces after a couple months on the course. So, speaking of action on the course, time for the GolfJ.com Fantasy Golf Primer. This week, they're headed to the Valero Open TPC San Antonio, 7,252-yard par 72 course. Jimmy Walker, defending champ in 2014, Stephen Bowditch won. He's been playing too good recently, but no. In 2014, he won a PGA Tour event. 2013, Martin Laird won. So you can catch it on TV Thursday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. on the Golf Channel. Those are Eastern Standard Time. And then Saturday, Sunday, 1 to 2:30 Golf Channel, 3 to 6 on CBS. Defending champ Jimmy Walker, fellow Texan Patrick Reed, head up a roster that features 9 of the top 30 players in the current rankings. At number 11, Reed will be the highest ranking player in the field. And Rhett, let's make our picks. Who do you got here?
Well, I'm definitely not going to go Jimmy Walker. I don't think his game's been wary or warning 16-1 odds in the highest or the lowest odds in the field. You know, I'm liking. And I know he missed the cut at the Masters, but I'm liking Phil Mickelson. I like how he's been playing overall, and I think that's where I'm going to go. He definitely has, you know, has been very consistent, and I just like the way he's playing. I think the Masters with Aberration, and that's not what he's been at this year. So 25-1, I'm going to go with Phil Mickelson for my winner.
Okay, looking for a winner for me. I just keep waiting for this guy to win. And
Tony Finau?
No, he's your guy. He's your guy. I'm going with Brooks Koepka, 22-1.
All right.
It's he's too good not to break through with all these guys, and it seems like it's almost delayed. His development has almost been a little delayed.
Yeah, he kind of stalled out a little bit.
Yeah, so he needs to win before the next major, get some confidence. And the other thing is, Valero Texas Open's a birdie course. I mean, you're going to see the winning score down there in the minus 20s.
Right, right.
And Koepka can make a lot of birdies, and I think Koepka's even actually a little better when he can kind of open it up and light it up out there. So I got Koepka winning. Now next we're going to go with solid plays, guys that maybe aren't at the top of the world golf rankings, but who might contend. And I got to go with Luke Donald.
Yeah.
40-1 odds. Tied for second. And of course, he tied for second on quite a bit at Hillenhead. But again, something's clicking with Luke Donald, and that could have been the stepping stone to him winning this week. So my solid play, Luke Donald.
Hard not to say he's a solid play, that's for sure. Especially he's been tinkering enough to get him back to where he used to be. So I think you're making a good call there. I'm going to go with Corbera Bello. In the four
tournaments. The Mexican.
Yeah, I like his playing lately. The four tournaments he's been top 20 in every one of them. A couple top 10s, a top 5, I think, maybe two top 5s. So I just like his consistency. So any tournament he's been in lately, he's been very, very good and way up the list. So I'm going to go with him as a solid play for this week.
And what about a sleeper?
Well, it's hard to call him a sleeper, like we've said, and sometimes you give me a hard time for those sleepers. But I don't know if we're going to be able to say Bryson DeChambeau is a sleeper anymore. But he's, only a second pro tournament officially. So we're going to go with him, see if he can keep the hot streak rolling. And I think this will probably be the last week you'll be able to call him a sleeper.
30-1 odds.
If you'll even
Vegas
let me
right
do
now.
That.
30-1 odds. Borderline sleeper, but I know that's why you roll with a sleeper.
I go close to the line. I like to.
Well, I'm going with Russell Henley, and that's actually probably borderline sleeper too, is because he's been playing really well as of late. 45-1 odds.
Sure.
Just another one of these guys that this could be his big week. You know, his first PGA. Did Henley ever win on the tour? I don't think he's won.
Think
no,
so.
This could be his first tour win. So, I'm going with Russell Henley. And that, my friends, is the GolfJ.com Fantasy Golf Primer. So we just watched a portion of a great interview there with John McGuire at Game Golf, and we've interviewed some big players in the golf industry.
Yep.
We had Damon Green on a couple weeks ago, Zach Johnson's caddy.
Yeah.
We talked to Peter Ripa on the day of he was the tournament director at the Farmers Open, and we talked to him on Wednesday morning as he was heading to the course. So we really interesting conversations, and we call him the GolfJ.com interview. And we've lined up a few more coming up.
Yep.
So who and you're the guy basically working the street getting these things lined up.
I think we'll have in the next week or so Billy Noshman from Cricket Golf, one of the founders of Cricket Golf, the apparel company. So they're going to come on with us very soon. And also Garen Rife, who's, you might remember Rife Clubs, Rife Putters. He's got a new company called Even Roll Putters, and he's going to be rolling them out soon. Pardon the pun, but he's going to be rolling out the Even Roll Putters very soon, and we're going to get a conversation with him. I'm actually going to go see his studio out in California, and once I get back from that, I think we're going to have set up an interview with him so we can talk about the studio and what he's got going on with Even Roll. I saw them out at the PGA show. Great, great putters. I mean, they feel that the sweet spot is awesome, and they roll real true. So I'm looking forward to seeing those, and it'll be a great conversation we'll have with him as well.
And, speaking of the cricket shirts, I think I have one on. I know I have one on right now.
Yep, there you go. They'll be happy to see that, definitely.
So, and they're just, there's a crowded market, I guess, for golf shirts. And we look for kind of alternatives to the Under Armours and the Nike. And these are truly unique. It's a throwback. It's a 1970 type of cotton
feel to it.
That's
the look they're going for, too. And look and feel, for sure. There's no Under Armour Dry Fit or Nike Dry Fit going on there. But they're very, very soft. They're very cool. And look forward to talking to them more about how they came to go that route with their designs and their styles. and you know, what they have going on at the Cricket Clubhouse. We might even get to see a little bit of the Cricket Clubhouse if we can Skype them in. So that'll be cool too.
So time for this week's trivia question answer. The question was, who was the last amateur to win a PGA Tour event? And no amateur has won a PGA Tour event since Phil Mickelson's victory at the 1991 Northern Telecom Open, now the Phoenix Open.
Right.
And he, you might remember the image of him wearing the conquistador hat.
Exactly.
And very, you know, what year was I say that? 1991.
91. Yeah. I remember we were in college back then. It was a long time ago, Jim.
Yeah. And so was he.
Yeah.
So was Phil Mickelson.
Exactly. Arizona State. I think he might have turned pro that next week or something like that. But that was hard to believe that nobody else has done it, but it actually, you know, when you think about it, it's pretty hard to do. I mean, that's, you're trying to beat
professionals,
seasoned veterans and seasoned pros out there on tour. And granted, he came on tour with a lot of hype as well, similar to Bryson and similar to, you know, Tiger. He was one of the big guys coming out of college, but Tiger didn't do it. And nobody in a long time didn't do it. It's not something that happens every day, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Every it still hasn't happened. It's 30 some years or 20 some years ago.
Yeah. And again, DeChambeau turns pro, so he's not going to be the one to do it.
Nope.
So that's the answer to the trivia question, Lefty. So hey, looks like we've done it again here. Wrapped up another great episode of the GolfJ.com podcast. And thanks for spending some time with us on the show. Connect with us online at, we're on Twitter at the Golf J. We're on Instagram at the_GolfJ. And we are on Facebook. Just search for us. Search for Golf J. And all of our episodes and the best of the wide world of golf on the web can be found at golfj.com. We'll be back next Monday to recap the Valero and talk about some other great golf-related things like we do.
There's always something good to talk about in the golf world.
So until then, my friends, hit 'em long, not often. GolfJ.com.